The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
It's that time again. Thanks for being with me today on Afternoons with Mike. I have in the studio with me today, Dee DeLoy. He is an artist. He does caricatures. He is an amazing animator of sorts with the artwork that he does. And it's available to be seen on YouTube. Dee DeLoy, I worked with him recently at the Orlando Union Rescue Mission.
Yes.
And we were there together. Dee, it's great to have you here.
I'm glad to be here, Mike. This is very exciting for me.
Well, it's great to have you back on. We didn't know it until we started talking, but we have some commonalities in our background, in our experience. There's a lot that is not common to me, I might add. Your artistic ability is off the chart. That I can't even imagine, but you did spend some time in radio.
I did. I started it in the college, which is UCF today, but it was called Florida Tech University back in those days.
Yes, it was.
And so I was a radio television minor. And I got a small little radio show and stuff that I was able to do called the Screamin' Blue Meanie Show. And I kind of favored 60s music. So I kind of talked like the old radio show guys. You know, hey, wow, those stacks of wax from way back. Those 45s that are still alive.
Yeah.
And so that
we used
to
call that puking back in the day.
Yeah, right. I think that's what they call it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that so I did that for a couple of years. And then I got hired by Al Chubb here in Orlando to work on WAJL radio when I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for a couple of years. And that was a lot of fun.
What years were those?
Probably, I'm thinking it was probably 79 through 81.
Yeah. And I came in 85.
Wow.
And started working there in November of 1985.
Wow.
And I was there for about 2 years, almost 2 years.
That's amazing that we would just cross just a couple of years there.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
But you knew Martha Tiller.
Yes, Martha. Oh, yes.
And she'd Jamie, bring her dog. Wonder Dog.
Yes, she had her little dog in there. And I had drive time from 5 until 8. And I think probably Al was probably sad that he gave that to me because I was always the loud one. And so maybe it was good, maybe it wasn't, but the guy before me, I think his name was Nehemiah, and he would get real close to the microphone and he'd read a scripture and talk about the Lord. And then he'd say, well, it's about 5 o'clock. And so Dee DeLoy is coming on. And so he'd get out of the studio and I'd sit down and I'd flip on the switch and I'd go, all right, turn up your radios. We're going to have a blast. The Holy Spirit is all over I-4.
And it might have been a little bit more energetic than what the afternoon drive was then.
Yes. Yeah. It got kind of crazy. I think I played a few songs and stuff that probably weren't on the rotation sometimes when I would bring my own albums in, which was kind of a no-no, but you know, Al was very forgiving. He kept me there for longer than I probably should have been, but I'd bring an album in. We were still spinning records at that time. We had, and so that was a lot of fun. And I brought one in, it was called, Why Should the Devil Have All the Good Music? And all of a sudden I was the only one there in the studio at the time. And the telephone started lighting up. I mean, it's blinking off and on and everything. And so I finally picked it up and everything. It's one sweet little lady. She goes, is this still WAJL? What's going on there?
Oh yeah. Yeah. You get a lot of feedback real quick when you're doing things like that.
Yeah.
It's just really fun, man. And you're right. Back in the day when I started radio in the early 70s, I was up in Indiana and there were, you know, we had carts back in the day. What were short for cartridges, and they looked like 8 tracks.
Yes.
And so you had those as well. And, you know, we played our commercials on the carts, but our albums and our 45s, that's the source for all the music. So we had to do the whole queuing up thing, and you did all of that. And
yes, that was so much fun.
You had to queue it correctly, or you'd get the wow, like,
that's right. And you couldn't walk on the vocals.
No.
So you had to make sure that you knew. A lot of the records were marked that way, so you knew how much music that you had before the vocals came up.
Mm-hmm.
So you could, if you had a joke or if you had something you wanted to say and everything, you could do a big intro or whatever, but you had to make sure you stopped right when the vocals started and stuff in the music.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd walk on those things. I go, oh, sorry, did it again. You know,
back in at the very end, before I went into ministry, the station I was working at had, they'd gained in technology to the point that there was a little blinking light that would start to blink real quick when the vocal was getting ready to come up.
Oh, now that's
that was pretty cool. So I had a little bit of a warning. And but
that would have helped me.
Yeah.
Well, we had they had demo tapes that every once in a while they would do a demo tape on us. And since I was in the class beforehand and everything, they would do this demo tape. And it was and so they would always take you for like maybe 30 minutes and see what you did. And then you run it back and you find out how you sounded and mm-hmm. everything. And then, you know, the guys would be sitting in there and they go, oh, there you walked on the vocals. Oh, there you did. Oh, there you did again. Oh, no, that joke wasn't funny. That was.
Well, you know, the radio was fun back then in a way that it's really different now. And those who love radio and still listen to radio, we're so grateful. All of our listeners are there. But technology definitely changed it, although radio did not end the way that a lot of people said it was going to end.
Mm.
And neither did AM radio stations. And fortunately for us, talk radio came around. And that really helped preserve the ongoing and sustaining of AM radio. And we're grateful for the fact that we have this medium today, because that's what we're on.
Wow.
Especially in Orlando. We're on an AM-only station in Orlando. In Gainesville, we're on WTMN. We're on AM-FM there. Same in Ocala, on an AM and an FM. And but, boy, I'm grateful for that history. You know, radio has been called, and you would know this, radio has been called the theater of the mind.
Yes.
Now, that's really, it's really important because imagination and the ability to play into ones who's listening only aurally, they get to see in their brain everything that's happening in their ear.
Yes.
And you do something similar to that, only in the visual arts.
Hmm.
You draw something and people are able to look at it, and their imagination then can fill in all of the noises, all of the action, all of the motion on a still piece. That's
right.
What you do.
Right. Well, that's the fun part, is just being able to take somebody's thoughts and ideas and actually put them on paper. Now, I'm still working a lot on paper. I mean, a lot of folks are working on the computer and all that. I haven't quite mastered that yet, but I'm still doing a lot on paper. So I think if I do it long enough, that there's going to be people that are just going to flock to me and say, can you teach me how to draw with a pencil?
That's right, because that's kind of a, you know, it's a stylus now that a lot of graphic artists will use.
That's right.
They'll draw right on something like an iPad.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. I learned just enough to be dangerous, but not enough to be able to do the kind of drawing that I do by hand. And so I thought, well, I asked the Lord, help me to be able to work in the medium that I feel the most comfortable with if I can. One day I probably will go digital more. But in the meantime, the kind of stuff that I do, I still am able to do by hand. And it's fun.
And a lot of your work is already digitized in the sense that they've done this almost like stop action animation work of your drawing. And you draw a lot with these Sharpies, which, if there was ever an unforgiving medium, it had to be this big black but with very sharp point Sharpie. And once that line is there, if you made a mistake, it's still there. You're not erasing that.
That's right. When I first started, I started at Disney when I was in college. And it was a miracle that I even got the job, because I really wanted to go to Gainesville and be a Gator. And so
go Gators.
Yes. But it turned out that I had to stay in town. My brother really needed to go and be in architecture and Gator, you know, in Gatorland and stuff. So he went there, but my folks could only afford one of us to go to a big college. So I stayed here. And when I did, somebody came in. I was actually washing boats at a boat place here. And a girl walked in that I knew from high school. And she said, what are you doing washing boats when you could be doing caricaturing at Disney? And I'm out there, you know, pulling weeds and washing boats and everything. And she said, And I had, at that time, I had, you know, this is the 70s, and I had long hair and I had sideburns and stuff that looked like Elvis, you know. And and so I said, you know, the last thing I want to do is cut my hair off and drive all the way to Disney. My gosh, you know. So, but you never say never. And I wound up being there, and I trained for about a month, and then they put me in the Contemporary Hotel, and I started drawing caricatures. So eventually we got down into the what they call the Fiesta Fun Center, which was the, and anybody that has been there a long time, they know that place. Mm-hmm. So we were drawing on what they call an overhead projector. Now, a lot of folks would never know what that is, but it's a big box that has a big stem that comes up that has a lens on it. And when you draw on it, it actually transfers to the lens and it shines on a big screen behind you.
So you were drawing on an acetate then?
I was drawing a piece of mm-hmm. acetate that had a border around it, a paper border.
All Christians understand that, because all overhead projectors were used to project lyrics for years.
That's right.
In churches.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. When we could get away with it without having the name of the person that wrote the song. Yeah, I used to do that. Well, I would draw on these acetates and we were doing it with real speedball pens with real ink wells, and we would dip it in there and we would draw, and we'd have to do. Somebody would stand in front of us for, you know, for like 30 seconds or something. And so we would have maybe a minute and a half. We would have to draw this person because we were getting paid kind of little back in those days. So you have to draw really fast and it dries really fast. And then you rip it off of there and stuff and hand it to this cashier, and then you got it. So they could see it on the screen behind me. So I did about 150 of those a night, and I was one of the slow ones. So some of the guys were drawing, you know, 200, 300 pictures a night.
Wow.
And everything on there. And it was crazy. But I got used to doing quick sketch. And at that time I was kind of griping to the Lord because I was going to school during the week. And then I was working on Saturdays and Sundays. And I had just become a Christian at that time, my first year in college. And so I was kind of upset because I was driving out there and going, Lord, you know, well, everybody's going on dates on Saturday night, and I want to go on a date. I got to draw. And then Sunday nights, I was starting to go to a new church, and they had the youth group and stuff was that night, usually after the service on Sunday nights. So I wanted to be with them, but I had to draw. So I griped and griped and griped. But one of my prayers for so long had been, I really like to see the country. And I said, Lord, I'd love to see the country. But I don't know how I'm going to afford to be able to see the country. I'm just a kid, you know, and everything. But then, so what happened was I learned how to do this quick sketch caricaturing. And when I was at Disney for 6 years doing that. Mm-hmm. And so about 1980, I started my own business, and I get a call just out of the blue. Nobody knew that I was on my own. I didn't do any advertising or anything, but that's where I always keep saying, you know, it only could come from God. It could only come because I get a call from New York City. And it was an advertising agency that had a plastics company, Freeman Plastics, I think it was called. And they did MasterCard and Visa. And they were having a great big bank card convention down at the Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach. Mm-hmm. And so this guy calls me up and he says, hey, we'd like to take you down there. We're going to pay your way. Now, I'm at this time, I'm about 24, 25 years old. And so this guy's telling me he's going to fly me down to the Fontainebleau Hotel. He's going to pay my way. He's going to pay for my food. I get to stay down there for 3 days, and they just want to know how much it costs for me to be able to draw for them in their booth, in their exhibit booth. So I got so excited that I hung up the phone on him by mistake.
Oh my goodness.
I'm going, no, now what do I do? So fortunately they called back and they flew me down there. And it turned out that the people that hired me liked what I did so much for those 3 days that for 5 more years, they took me all over the country doing the MasterCard convention. And I had a chance to see all these major cities. And at that time I had plenty of friends that were in all these different major cities. So I would stay behind after the thing was over and I'd get a chance to see the cities and do all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And it was all because God had me working quick sketch caricaturing.
Yeah.
And I would have never known that he was preparing all of that, you know, all the times when I was griping and everything, you know, I don't want to do this. And then it opened up and here I was.
You know, so often that happens, isn't it? When we find ourselves not being happy, not being content, thinking that I want to do something else. And if we only just took the time to see what God was doing and give him an opportunity, he opens doors that we can't open.
Yes.
And gives us the heart's desires.
It was amazing. I mean, so many stories. It's just been amazing, the people that I've had to see. I had a chance to draw Pat Boone and his family. And that was one of the very first things I did when I was there. I was alone in the game room one night. I was doing pastels. And a lady comes up and sits down beside me, and boy, she was real pretty. And so I started kind of flirting with her, and she said, "Could you draw these pictures from photographs? We need pictures of our whole family, and could you do them from photographs?" Well, she had all these pictures with her. I didn't bother looking at them because I was looking at her. So she gives me the pictures, and she said, "Well, the family's singing over in the Tomorrowland Terrace. And so we can't come over here and everything. So if you could do this, we want to give them to our mother tomorrow," which would have been Sunday, and it was Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
So I goofed around talking to her for a little bit. And then I finally said, "Well," and I still hadn't looked at the pictures yet. And I said to her, "Well, so who are you singing with?" Thinking it was probably just some Disney group or something, mm-hmm. and everything. And she goes, "Oh, well, the Pat Boone family." And I looked at the pictures, and there they are, the four girls and Pat and his wife. And I'm just going, "Oh my gosh." So I said, "Well, okay. All right." I thought fast, and I thought, "Okay, all right, I'll do these, but you got to send your dad over to pick them up." So here it was, 11 o'clock at night.
Was that Debbie or was it one of the other?
It was Lori Boone.
Lori Boone.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. And so at about 11 o'clock, I go and change in my civvies, and I'm sitting there with all these done. And mind you, I was new at this. So if I went back and looked at these today and stuff, I probably would gag, you know. I mean, I was just learning, and especially with pastels and everything, it was just new for me. But I did them all. And so he came by, and all of a sudden he comes strutting through, and he's got his white patent leather shoes on. And for anybody out there that doesn't know Pat Boone and stuff, mm-hmm. he used to wear white
Bucks.
Bucks shoes and stuff. And he had this beautiful gold coat on and everything. And he comes over, and so I show him to him, and we sit down in the lobby, and he's just going, "Wow, that's Lori. Whoa, that's Debbie. Oh, that's Cherry. Oh my gosh." And so he knew every one of them. And I'm thinking, well, I guess I did okay, because he figured out who they were. I think I wrote the names on them too, so maybe that helped.
Just a little give.
So I had asked him to go to church with me the next day, and I think somebody had already asked him to go to one of the local churches. So he was going there. But from that time on, every time they would come back to Florida, and they would come in, like he opened the Top of the World, which was a restaurant at the mm-hmm. top of the Contemporary. And so I found out that he was going to be there. So I called around and tried to find his manager. And so I got a hold of the manager, and I said, "Hey, I did his caricatures, you know, years ago. And I would really like to see him. Well, you know, I think he wouldn't mind seeing me." And I was really confident about the whole thing. And he said, "No, absolutely not. No way. Uh-uh." So we wore these little smocks and stuff sitting behind this booth. And at that time we didn't have a lot of supervision. So I said, "Well, okay. All right. Thanks." And so I got a pad of paper and I got a pen, and I had my little smock on and everything. And I wound up going upstairs, and I was able to go up, and all the waiters actually got me into the little waiters area, and he was singing right on the stage. I mean, just like a throw away from me. And so they turned up the lights just a little bit for me in the waiters area, and I was able to draw them. And they were nice enough. I said, "You know, if I could draw this guy and I could get him to sign it, we'll just make copies of it and I'll give them out to all the waiters." And they said, "Sure, well, come on over here. We'll help you out, you know?" So they got me all
smart
settled.
Guy.
It was pretty cool the way it worked. And so I was able to draw him. It just turned out it looked like him that night, which was, I'm real thankful. So I went back through the kitchen, and they had a special, had a special elevator to take him down and everything. And so anyway, eventually he comes back in, and Al Chubb, the owner of WAJL, also was with him. And so they walked through and everything, and he says, "Hey, I know you. I think your caricatures are up in my game room.
You did our pictures."
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so he signed it, and you know, it was a great night, but the manager wasn't happy with me.
I bet.
Yeah, he wasn't happy.
Dee Deloy is my guest. We're up against a break. We're going to take that break right now, and we'll be back with Dee in a moment. He's an artist, caricaturist, and we'll be back with him in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today is Dee Deloy. Now, I asked Dee if that was his given name during the break, and it is not. Tell us your full name and why in the world your parents called you Dee.
Oh, well, I was born to a, my dad was a B-52 navigator in the Air Force, and my mom was a spy with the OSI. Yeah, honest, really. I'm serious, wow. Really. Yeah, I'm going to write a book called My Mother the Spy, and it'll have like 100 pages in it of blank, just blank paper. Because yeah. She never told us the thing that she did. Well, anyway, they named me Warren Charles Deloy Jr., but I think they took one look at me when I was born and they said, you know, he'll never remember that.
Doesn't look like a Warren. So, no. He looks like a D.
Yeah, we're just going to call him D. You know, in fact, I think they went A, B, C, D. Yeah, that's it, D. So I even put a D on my ring here and stuff. So in case I forgot it and stuff, I would just be able to look at my ring. And
that's crazy. A D is quite the artist. If you were listening at the end of segment one, we were talking about his being able to work with Pat Boone and family when they were appearing at Disney. And so many big artists like that came into Disney during those years, magical years, pardon the pun. I mean, really, they were at the Magic Kingdom with the Contemporary Hotel, where you did a lot of your artwork and getting the help of all the waiters. That was pretty cool. Yes. Have you seen Pat in recent years?
Well, the end of the story, I did see them occasionally. They would come in. But the end of the story was about 1983. And this is when I went into my own business. And so I was out in L.A. doing the American Banking Association, and I was doing caricatures at that. And so I rented a Dodge Dart afterwards, this little dinky Dodge Dart, and I wanted to see L.A. And so I drove up and down the Pacific Coast Highway and got to see all the places where the Beach Boys sang and all that stuff and everything. And the one thing I wanted to do was to find Pat Boone's house. So on Sunday, I went to church. I believe at that time, Chuck Swindoll was out there. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Fullerton to his church. And then during the afternoon, I was going to try and find Pat's house. And then the evening, I went to John MacArthur's church, which is across the Santa Monica Mountains. I think that's what that's called. Anyway, so I was driving through Beverly Hills, and there it was, this big, giant Cadillac behind this big wrought iron fence. And I said, that's Pat's house. Oh my gosh. So I'm driving through, you know, there's Bentleys and, you know, fantastic cars that are going by me and everything, Rolls Royces and everything. I'm in my little Dodge Dart and I'm driving up and down that road where, if you've ever watched the Beverly Hillbillies on TV and stuff, it's that road. It's lined by those big palm trees and stuff. So whatever that is, I don't remember what it, Beverly Boulevard, something, I don't know. But anyway, I stopped the car right on the curb there. And just left it sitting there on the road. And I went up to the driveway and there was a little call box there. And I pushed the button on the call box and all of a sudden this lady's voice came on and it was Shirley Boone, Pat's wife. And she said, who's this? And I said, well, this is Dee Deloy. And I'm from we've got your caricatures in our game room. She said, well, you know, I would love to have you come in. But Debbie just had twins, and so we've got a house full of stuff and everything, but we could still talk. So why don't you just sit down there on the driveway, and we'll just talk for a while. And so for a half an hour, I put my finger on that button, and we talked back and forth to Shirley Boone and everything. It was the funniest thing I'd ever saw.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. So that was probably the last time I ever had any coordination with him, except he came to Orlando some years later and did a little concert and stuff having to do with pro-life. Mm-hmm. And I think I saw him one time then, but that was about it.
And we spent some time in Indiana with Debbie Boone, interviewed her. I was back in that day. I was not doing radio. I was actually a TV producer. And I had the camera, and I was the one who was actually recording it. And the quick story on that one, I did an entire half an hour program. And then checked it afterwards and realized the audio was horrible.
Oh, no.
I had made in my excitement because she was real well known for You Light Up My Life and all of that back in the day. And she was so gracious and allowed us to do the entire half hour TV show again.
Wow.
It was my most embarrassing moment in all of my years in television. I can't believe I did not take my earphones with me that day to monitor.
Oh boy.
So the audio was distorted. It was just awful. So that's how nice she was. And ran into Pat Boone this year. at the NRB and got to meet him and got to tell him that story.
Wow.
And that was a lot of fun.
That's neat. He's, yeah. I can't believe he's still going. He's just sadly, surely went to heaven a few years ago.
Yes.
But he's still doing bathtub commercials and all sorts of stuff.
And he's starring in a new movie that's coming out.
Really?
Uh-huh. Called The Mulligan. It's going to be coming out next year in 2022. And the guy that produced that show, or the director of the show, is Rick Eldridge.
No way.
Yeah.
My friend Rick Eldridge.
Rick Eldridge right here.
Oh, man.
And so I got to talk with Rick as well. And so this movie is coming out, and Rick is the director of this movie with
That's
Pat.
Amazing. He was amazing. I remember when he was really young, came to my house when I was still living with my folks, and he came to the house and let me do artwork for him. I think I even did one of his album covers, his real early ones or something. And what a great guy. And then to find out he's a movie director.
He's
now.
A movie director. Yeah.
That's great.
Really won some nice awards and very talented. And Rick he came to back in the day when I was at AJL. I came up to the radio station. I interviewed him for the Jesus Festival
at
the fairgrounds.
Yes. Oh,
back
yes.
when that was going on.
Used to go to those all the time, too.
Yeah.
That was with all the great people and stuff that were singing back in those days. It was so much fun.
Well, Rick was a big part of all of that, was one of the promoters. And it was really exciting to get to talk with him. But yeah, those stories that God's given you are really, those are meaningful things that you've been able to do. And I think a lot of people don't realize that the people that they will pass who's doing this great artwork like you're doing, you're sitting there drawing. I mean, you're a machine, man. You're knocking these out. And that's what you were doing the night at the recent night at the party that we were together when I met you. At the rescue mission, you
yes.
donate a lot of your time for things like that.
Well, I'm very humbled by being able to do that. I just through different issues in my life and everything that I felt like that I really needed to give away things rather than just one of the pastors at my church says that you can't believe in everything that you do and stuff and feel like you have to make money for it. And he said, you know, sometimes you have to just give it away.
Yeah.
And so knowing that the talent came from the Lord, it's even more exciting and stuff to know that I could give it away to people and do something that would make them laugh. And that's the cool part about caricaturing and things, because it usually makes them laugh and they have a good time. And I was working a little bit for Arnold Palmer Hospital, and I would get to draw some of the kids that had cancer. And that was really heart-wrenching for me.
Yeah.
They would bring them in and I'd have a chance to be able to, they had a little room in there where they could play and everything. And I had a chance to draw them for a while. And that was very, very special to be able to do that. But then after that, I had the opportunity to be out there with the Union Rescue Mission. And they've got two separate buildings, one for the men and one part of town and stuff. Then they've got one for the women and children. So I started on Christmas Day because I didn't have any family around or anything at the time. And I was just felt like I was going to feel sorry for myself on Christmas morning. So I thought, well, I'm going to go out there and just see what I could do. So it just happened that I came in on a November, right before Christmas, and they happened to have an orientation at that time. So they took me through the orientation. That's all I needed to do. They did, you know, the background check on me and all that stuff and everything, and found out, you know, that I was okay. That was good to find that
Pass
out.
Pass the check.
Everything. Yes. And so on Christmas morning, I was sitting in their dining room and stuff drawing women and children. And it was such a blessing. There was just something about it where knowing that I wasn't under contract or I wasn't making anything for it. It was just an opportunity just to try and use what God gave me to bless somebody else.
You know, they have this phrase that we hear about called starving artists.
Mm.
And that's probably well-deserved in many cases. It applies not only to the graphic arts, like what you do with your hand, but also other artists like music artists and recording arts and et cetera. But, you know, to think that God's opened the door for you to have your business and to have the experiences and even the opportunities, like you said, to give some of this back, that's pretty cool.
Yes, it is really cool. And as far as starving artists go, I mean, you know, I mean, I run into people all the time that say, have you been to the beach today? And I'm saying, what do you mean? And he said, well, you're still wearing your inner tube. So I know that I'm not a starving artist. You can tell that
still
stuff.
Wearing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, but it is such a blessing to be able to do something where there's opportunities all the time. Sometimes sitting in a restaurant, and I can tell that the lady who's serving, the man who's serving us or something, is just not looking good, and they've had a bad day. Maybe they've got something going on at home and stuff that's hurting and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times I'll pull a napkin out and I'll draw their caricature right there, and I can do it so super quick. So I can give it to them right away, and it always, always brightens them up.
I bet.
Yeah. It's very exciting. And sometimes then we'll even ask, you know, if you'd like to have us pray for something.
Yeah.
And that, just by giving them that thing, it sometimes it just opens the door.
My son was in the hospital when he was real young, and we were in Orlando at the time, and he was sick, and we had a guy in our church who was a cleanup artist, an animator at Disney.
Ah,
and
yes.
He was the guy who had the cleanup art and did all of the really cool work for Simba. Back then, The Lion King was out.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did a drawing for David of young Simba, and had like the balloon at the top, like what you do. And that's so meaningful. And it brightens up the heart of somebody that's sick, a young person like that. Thank you for doing what you do.
Oh, well, it's a, you know, thank you, Lord. I don't take any credit. I just show up. I mean, I feel like I just get to be the pencil, and he's the hand that draws, uses me. I sponsored some children. My brother and I sponsored children in Peru. And so some years ago, we had a chance to go and see the kids. I'd seen the commercials and stuff for Compassion International on TV, and I thought, gosh, they can do that. We can do that too. So we went to Peru, and we got to see these kids. Well, I speak about, you know, that much Spanish, and I'm a little tiny poquito, I think is the right word, right?
Si habla so, Taco Bell.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think I learned how to say mucho gusto to everybody there and stuff. That's all I knew. But We went to a mission when we were there, and there were tons of kids that came into this big room, and I had a blackboard there. And so I pointed at one of them, and I would do their sketch real quick. And I'd point at another one, and I'd do another sketch, and I would do all their pictures and stuff. I had like 25 kids on this blackboard, and I drew a little bird character that I have named Wordsworth, and I drew him up there. He's got a little safari hat, safari jacket on and stuff, and hiking boots. And he used to carry the word around with him and stuff. So we called him Wordsworth. So I had him standing there holding the Bible and all these kids around him. And then I wrote in Spanish. I asked somebody how to say it and everything, and wrote in Spanish, Jesus loves all the children of the world. And it just got everybody's attention. They just loved it. And I was able to communicate with them. Even though I couldn't speak their language, I was just able to communicate by just being able to draw some pictures.
That's wonderful. Yeah. How did you come to know the Lord to begin with?
Well, that was interesting. I grew up in the church. My dad was Catholic, and my mom was nothing. She was born on the farm, and I don't think she ever went to church or anything when she was growing up. So when they got married, they decided we would become Lutheran. So we went to a Lutheran church all my life. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got my background and loved the stories. And in fact, I started doing my drawing. I would come home from Sunday school, and I'd have a little paper that had, the recent thing that we studied, and I'd put it up on the window, and I'd put another piece of paper over the top of it, and I'd trace it off. And that's how I got started drawing and stuff as a little kid. And so when I went into college, I'd had a lot of influence and stuff from Campus Crusade, or Crew, they call it now, on my high school campus. And in between Christmas and New Year's and my senior year, they had a thing called Campus Crusade Christmas Conference. And it was at Rock Eagle, Georgia, if I remember right. Some of the kids that were going, they were basketball players and stuff. I thought it was some kind of a sporting event. So we all went out, and we earned like $60 by picking up trash and everything. And that paid our whole way to go. So we went on a bus up there to Rock Eagle, Georgia for a whole week. And when we got up there, I started noticing they said, oh, you've got to take a class. We got to have classes and stuff. And I'm going, classes. I thought we were going to have fun. So we had to take classes like the four spiritual laws and things like that. The one that everybody liked the most and everything was called love, sex, and dating. So everybody signed up for that one. So we got into these really fun classes, and then it was the first time I'd ever heard like Jesus music being played from a band, because being in the church I was in and stuff, it mostly was organ music and things like that. This was just crazy. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. And so I got home after a week, and my parents picked me up at the local YMCA, and it was New Year's Eve night. And all they wanted to do was just get home, watch Guy Lombardo on TV or whatever and stuff, you know. And I was just like jazzed. I got in the car and I'm going, oh, praise the Lord. You just can't believe what happened to me. Oh my gosh, this was so. And my dad's going, what's wrong with him? Right. So they just didn't understand, you know, because they just didn't understand. So anyway, I went to college after that. I just got so excited about what was going on, but I just never really committed my life to Jesus at that time. So I was in college and I started playing some ping pong with some guys out there at at the college here in town. And one of the guys said, why don't you come down to First Baptist of Orlando? We have a singing group called the New Wind. And I said, oh, well, no, I go to church. I don't think I'll do that. And they said, D, you know, going to church doesn't make you a Christian any more than standing in the garage makes you a car. And that hit me. I'm just going, what? Well, what's that mean? And so they started talking to me about all the stories in the Bible that I had heard and about Jesus going to the cross and how he paid for my sin. But I knew all of that. I knew he died for my sins, but I just never personalized that. So I went down that Monday. I went down for the practice for this New Wind group. There are about 125, 150 kids in there from colleges and high schools here. And they were playing all the recent music. This is like 1974 or 75. And they were playing Bill Gaither music. They were playing groups like Love Song, and Larry Norman and stuff like that. And it was so exciting. I was sitting in the back of the room, just sitting on a chair, listening to everybody. And it was kind of funny because they're all hugging each other and everything. And I'm just like, you know, that's not me, man. You know, I mean, this is kind of weird. You know, these guys coming up and hugging each other and stuff. But it was so exciting to me that I went ahead and joined the group. And I started learning the songs. And so one day we were singing at Boone High School here in Orlando. And we were on risers up on the stage. And we were singing to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes at the time. And so I heard the Lord say to me, not out loud, but it's something in my head, you've never repented, D, so you can't go down and help these people.
We're going to have to hear the rest of this story when we come back. This is Too Good. My guest is D. Deloy, and he is an artist, and this story of him coming to the Lord will pick back up in just a moment, right here on Afternoons with Mike on The Shepherd. Back for our last segment today with D. Deloy, an artist, caricature and expert, and somebody that loves the Lord and was telling us this story. It's so interesting. So pick back up, man, where you were.
Well, that night we were singing before the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and we, about 125 of us, were up on risers standing on this stage. And so the youth director at that time was teaching that night on repentance. I'd heard the word. I didn't know what it meant. And so when he talked about the fact that it's like turning 180 degrees and going in a different direction from the things that you know that you're doing wrong. And so I was listening to what he said. But then when he mentioned to everybody that if there's people that were coming forward that wanted to know about the Lord after the concert was over, that we were supposed to go down and we were using the four spiritual laws from Campus Crusade at the time. And we were supposed to go down and help them. Well, I was standing there and most of them were going down and helping people. And I'm kind of there all by myself. And I heard this in my head and it was the Lord saying, D, you can't go down and help them because you've never repented. And it was so, it hit me so hard. And I just said, Lord, I don't know if you're in me or you're not in me. I don't know. I don't know, but I need to have you in me tonight. So I'm repenting. Whatever I got to do, I'm repenting. So come in and get in me right now. And it changed the world for me. I kid about the fact that I went home and got my Bible from underneath the TV guide. I unzipped it for the first time in a long time and everything and started reading it. And everything, I started memorizing scripture and I was hanging out with these guys and stuff that were praying together. I'd never prayed out loud with guys before. And we were doing that and I got discipled and things just, it was just the most amazing change in my life. In fact, it was changed so much. My father was very staunch Lutheran, and he taught Bible study there, and he was a good man. But he wouldn't let me join this church. In fact, my mom thought at the time, she thought, oh my gosh, she grew up around Baptists in the country and everything, and she thought it was a cult. And so she said, I'm not, I don't want you going there. But my dad saw such a change in me because I was out talking to people about Jesus in the evenings and stuff instead of, you know, going to movies or all that kind of stuff. And he couldn't figure out what's going on. And I quit arguing with him. You know, we weren't beating each other. Yeah, you know, I was batting heads together and stuff. And he was noticing that. And he said, I don't know what's going on, but if you want to go down there, start going to that church. He said, you better go now. And I said, so I rushed down there before he changed his mind.
Yeah.
And so I joined down there and it just changed everything for me.
How many years has that been now?
Oh my gosh. That was when I joined there, it would have been 1978.
And you've been a part all through.
I've been at the same church, all this time.
Ah, that's great.
Yeah, I've done so many neat things. That's such a wonderful church for me. But I mean, they've got wonderful churches in this town, but I just happen to be a member of that one. And when people say, well, you're a Baptist, no, I'm not. I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I just get a chance to go to a Baptist church. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter.
I had a chance to interview Jim Henry last year, and what a time that was, and what a privilege. I mean, a man that was so well known, traveled with the president, and led this church, not only the church, but the denomination, the Southern Baptist Convention, for a while.
Yes.
And you talk about a down-to-earth guy who really is exactly like what you're talking about, really follows the Lord and the leading of the Lord, and really is a Christian who is a Baptist guy, but That's his main thing, is the Lord. And to see the difference, and what you said is so true, our proximity to a church building or even church people does not ensure that our relationship is right with the Lord.
Yes. Yeah, it's very true. Brother Jim, he was my pastor for 28 years.
Mm-hmm.
I love that man. And I was so fortunate to, back in the day when we were still, the church was still downtown, downtown Orlando. He and I looked very similar. I wore the same glasses as he did. We kind of had our hair the same way and everything. We both were about the same size. And so on Wednesday nights, when they had the Wednesday night dinners, he would walk around and talk to people a lot of times. And so every once in a while, I'd walk in to get something to eat, and people from across the room that couldn't see me really well, they'd go, hey, Brother Jim. And I'd wave my hand at him and go, hey, nice to see you. Nice to see you. I was so proud that somebody would even equate me with him in any way at all. He was such a great man. And so a few years ago, he wrote his autobiography, and he came to me and asked me if I would do the cover for his book. And I had a chance to spend 4 or 5 hours with him going through pictures and figuring out what we wanted to do. And I came up with some designs and stuff for him. And it was just so much fun just to spend the time with a man that loves Jesus that much. And then his wife passed away from Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to write a book to people who were caring for Alzheimer's mm-hmm. patients.
I read that book.
I did the cover on that one too.
Did you?
I did. Yes. That was,
goodness.
In fact, that was a really funny cover because I was trying to figure out, there's a lot of things that people have done graphically and stuff that kind of give the idea of there's a tree that's shaped like a person, and part of the back of the tree and the leaves are floating off in the, you know, into the atmosphere. And so different things they've done to kind of give an idea of Alzheimer's. I was trying to come up with something different that maybe nobody had done. And, you know, there's nothing new. but I thought, how about, I remember when I'm on the beach and I was making sandcastles and the water would come in and it would wash the sandcastle out. And so I thought, well, the name of the book is called What Now?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, how about a big question mark? So we did. So I went out to the beach with a 6-foot ladder and stuck it in the sand and waited for the waves to come up. And I actually drew a great big question mark in the sand. And it was drawing all these people. All these folks were standing around watching. They said, we've never seen anybody on the beach with a 6-foot ladder before. And so I'm standing on the top of the ladder photographing the question mark as the water is starting to wash it out. And that we put that on the cover.
Mm.
And it was really a neat, just a great opportunity to be able to do something like that. And
What a great book. And he told his story of going through his wife's battle and how that so many people who are, it seems so much more prevalent today with people going through dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever.
Yes.
It is something so meaningful. His story, and he co-wrote that with another young lady that was in the church as well, who I think had gone through some similar experiences.
That was her father.
With her dad,
dad, yes.
So that's a helpful book. If you know of anybody at all that is going through that, that's a great resource. Go on Amazon. Just type in Jim Henry. What now?
What now?
What now is the name of the book. And I did not know that my guest, Dee DeLoy, was the artist for the cover. You've done that a little bit.
It's been very exciting to do something like that. I've had an opportunity to do a few book covers in my day. And we did one for, to prison inmates one time and actually used the old Good News for Modern Man, if you remember that way back and everything. It had some very... They were more like stick figures, but they didn't have faces, but they were just little simple figures. And so the man who actually did this paraphrase for the inmates wanted me to do something like that. So I did them all through the whole book. And that was one that went out and is still to this day, you can still find it on Google and stuff is still being sold out there.
Isn't
somehow.
That something? Yeah, now you did something called Joanna and it was, you did the artwork for the story and this too is on YouTube. And so people can go and see that. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate to be able to get a YouTube channel and just put my two or three things that I've got on there. Joanna was a crew, which was Campus Crusade at one time. Crew has a thing called their champions. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was called now. But these are the folks that donate quite a bit of money to them. And so they have a big festival type of thing and stuff. And this time it was up in Canada. And so they came to me and asked me if I would do drawings for them. They were going to have an introductory video that was talking about Joanna, which I believe is in, I want to say it's Luke 3. I'm not sure. But anyway, I think it's someplace in Luke. It's only just a couple of verses that even talk about her. Apparently she was the wife of Herod and she had quite a bit of money and she was a follower of Jesus. And so it talks about how, and so the lady that was doing all the research, she researched the kind of costumes that they wore at that time, the clothes, the different kinds of jewelry and everything. And so I had an opportunity to draw a whole series of pencil pictures that they put together in a video and put an overdub on it and everything with voiceovers and some sound effects and everything that showed Joanna being part of the team with Mary Magdalene and going to the tomb and finding, you know, Jesus not there and everything. And it was just very exciting to show a little bit of the history behind this lady that only has just a couple of verses in the Bible about her.
Wow. And it's so well done. I had a chance to watch this with Dee before we began this program, and oh my goodness, it is so well done. Your artistic ability is off the chart from my standpoint. You do so many different mediums. You've mentioned you've done pastel. We talked about the fact that you're a line art drawer with a Sharpie of all mediums, something that I just think is so great. I love those. There is something about a Sharpie that you can make some bold lines and some really nice drawings, but your work with pencil on that particular project was just so striking with all the shading. How did you learn all of it? Was that something you learned in school or how did you pick that up?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to draw houses. I would sit in front of the television set and I would look in the newspaper, and I'm talking about when I was like, you know, in elementary school. And I would find the houses that were for sale and I would sit there and I would draw them with a pencil. And it was so much fun I always thought I'd be an architect. My brother became an architect.
Yeah.
I didn't do that, but that started the whole thing. The style that I worked the Joanna pictures with was called, was named by a book was called, The Pencil by Paul Cal. I think it's Cal or Cali, C-A-L-L-E. And he used to be NASA's illustrator. And he has the most amazing style. So I kind of picked that style up and I drew these pictures that way and stuff. It's more of a directional style with pencil rather than building up the graphite. And I love Pencil. It's just, there's something about it. There's just so, there's just a lot of body to it and everything when you can just draw with a pencil and make something look three-dimensional.
And you do, and it's the shaded, it is so beautifully done. The character of the drawing that you did for Joanna, you actually have her. So it's a figure that you've actually, you didn't draw that off of somebody else's picture. You came up with her face and just the expressions. Those are some of the most difficult to stay consistent with a character and to be able to draw the way you did. This is a gift from God, my man.
Yeah, it is. And I'm so thankful. I go back and I think of the people in my high school, and they would have never, when they were giving out awards and everything, they never would have given me the award for having a business for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the class clown. I was always, you know, always all over doing everything that you could think of, but doing, you know, all the right things. But but it was funny because I've had a business for 41 years now, and it's
goodness.
Been completely sustained by the Lord. I say he's my CEO. If it hadn't been for him, there would be no way I would ever be able to do this kind of work.
Right.
But every time I pray, when things don't always go so well, and maybe things are not doing well financially or whatever and stuff, and I would just ask him, Lord, am I in the right place? And
mm-hmm.
he continues to show me that I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And then he just blesses it with people calling from everywhere in the world. I've got stories, but you don't have the time to hear them. But I just got so many stories and stuff to talk about.
Well, we'll have to do that. I'm going to have you back up at some point here, and we'll have to get into more of your stories. Tell us how people can find you. I know you have a Facebook site.
Yes. Well, my business name is New Start Art, N-E-W-S-T-A-R-T, New Start. I named it after the verse in the Bible that says that, you know, when a person becomes a Christian and everything, that he has a new
start.
All
things become new.
That's right. Mm-hmm. New Start. So it's New Start Art, and that's the Facebook page, the name of the Facebook page. So you can go to that and actually see a lot of my art there.
So type New Start Art in the Facebook window,
yes. And
search it out,
uh-huh.
and you'll get there. And as I've already mentioned, you can type in D Deloy, D-E-E-D-E-L-O-Y, in the YouTube window, and you'll see these videos like the one for Joanna. And it's all so well done, man. I can't tell you how much fun
this has been. Thank you, Mike. This has been a blast. It's so fun to get back in front of a microphone again and everything. I mean, scared to death when I ever did it before, but it just feels just natural now.
No, it's a lot of fun, and it's great to have you here. I'm so glad we got to work together with our good friend Freddie Clayton over at the Rescue Mission.
Yes.
And really love that guy. So thanks, Dee, for being up here. Next time that you come back. And friends, thank you for being with us as well. We'll see you the next time on Afternoons with Mike.